Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about investing for cash flow with real estate investment expert Kevin Bupp. But before we get there, we're going to listen to a quick message from some of our sponsors, and then we'll get right into it. You're taking care of your own financial health, but what about the financial health of your family if you should pass? Life insurance is an important part of any financial plan. And Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people. 56% of Health IQ customers save between 4 and 33% on their life insurance. Health IQ can save their customers this much because physically active people have a lower risk of heart disease, a lower risk of cancer, and a lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious life. To see if you qualify for a discount on your life insurance, head on over to healthiq.com/moneytree. Again, that's healthiq.com/moneytree to see if you can qualify for up to 33% off on your life insurance rates.
And hey, guys, have you ever wondered if there were a way to capitalize on all that online chatter, the millions of investors on social media? Well, guess what? Your wait's over, because the Buzz Index uses the same artificial intelligence techniques that's used by some of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds, and it's now at your fingertips. You can make their edge your edge. Buzz Index trades under ticker symbol BUZ. Check it out at moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. That's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ.
Thank you very much. Once again, welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast and welcome to our guest, Kevin. Hi, Kevin. How are you today?
Oh, Miranda, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Let's just kind of get right into it. Now, you talk about investing for cash flow. Is that right?
Yes, that is absolutely correct.
What are some of the ways that you invest for cash flow? What are some of the strategies you use to make sure that money keeps coming in each month?
Yeah. So just to set the foundation properly, I'm a real estate investor. First and foremost, we invest in real estate and we are cash flow investors. And so what that means is when we look at an investment opportunity, Miranda, we're looking at it as a business. We want to know what kind of reoccurring revenue that investment can put into our pockets each and every month or each and every year, like spendable money, money that we can literally go to the bank, pull out and go buy another asset with or can reinvest into something else. And what we try to shy away from, or more so look at as icing on the cake, is the appreciation side. There's a lot of investors out there that really buy for capital appreciation, not necessarily focusing on the cash flow. They're just looking for, you know, to buy low, sell high, and they want to get that capital appreciation on the backside. For us, that's more icing on the cake. We want to know what kind of revenue is going to go into our pockets today that is spendable, not just shown on our personal financial statement, but you know, it's real money that's ready to spend and ready to reinvest.
Okay, so that's awesome. And now you mentioned real estate. Why do you like real estate so much as kind of this business cash flow investing model?
You know, for me, it's something that it was what I was first introduced to. It's tangible on top of that. I love being able to have the touchy and feely aspect of it. I know that sounds kind of silly and elementary, but I like the fact that it's tangible and you know, honestly, every market's a little different. So we can control, I feel like I can control real estate a lot more than I control other types of alternative investments, such as a stock market, as we know with what just happened with the Dow over the last couple of days. And so for me, the tangible side of things is very, very, very important. And real estate offers me that tangible aspect.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note that at the time we're recording this episode, the Dow just lost more than 1,000 points.
Scary, right?
and it went a little bit crazy. And personally, not that I'm, you know, into predicting the market or anything, but I think there's room for it to fall further. I think that we're in a place where we're a bit overbought. And so I can see where something tangible that you know, even if real estate values plunge, it's something tangible that you can do something with later.
Yeah. In addition to that, I mean, there's also the benefit of utilizing leverage, you know, so we utilize debt instruments and when we're buying our investment properties, depreciation is another big quality feature of real estate investing. So there's many other reasons why we love real estate, but those are just some of the top ones that we look for.
So when you're talking about investing and trying to decide what things you're going to invest in and try and make sure you have that cash flow coming, how do you do that? So what sort of process do you use to determine what's going to make a good investment?
Well, I'll tell you that I'm an investor that enjoys focus. And so I try to shy away, like a lot of us entrepreneurs have, from the shiny object syndrome. And what I mean by that is there's a million and one different ways to make money by investing in real estate. And that can mean different asset types, buying notes versus buying tangible real estate. I mean, there's many different ways to do it. And so I've owned many different types of real estate over the years, from single family home portfolios to apartment complexes to commercial real estate. And then today, our focus, or at least for the past 5 years, has been mobile home parks. And so we only invest today in mobile home parks. But as far as what we're looking for, like how we actually determine whether or not we're actually going to invest in a particular property, first and foremost, we look at the market that it's in, right? We want to know that the market is sustainable and that there's going to be a demand for our type of product that we're offering, which is affordable housing. And so that's first and foremost. But then after that, we really look at the actual economics of the deal, or the projected economics of the deal. And we want to know that we can, you know, safely utilize the leverage, put some leverage in place, and achieve, comfortably achieve, the target ROI that we're seeking, which on most of our investments we're seeking in year one, we want to know that we can hit somewhere in the range of 16 to 20% annualized cash on cash returns.
You mentioned investing in mobile home parks. We've actually done an episode on that in the back. Even though that you specialize in mobile home parks, you did mention some like single family units and multifamily units. Are those also good things to look at if you're trying to invest in something that provides you with cash flow?
You know, I think it's personal preference more than anything else. You know, there's a scalability aspect that I like about mobile home parks versus like single family homes. Whereas, you know, we could put the same amount of effort in and buy 100 units versus buying just one single family home investment. So although I believe that single family home investments can be great vehicles, apartment complexes can be great investment vehicles, and there's many other types of real estate as well. Again, million and one different ways to make money in real estate. I think you just really have to pick the one that, you know, personally resonates with you as an individual, and the one that you feel like you can put your effort into, and again, you know, enjoy the ride along the way. So with us, it's mobile home parks for many different reasons. But to answer your question just quite candidly, yes, I think they're all great investment vehicles. As long as you understand the underlying fundamentals, you're buying in the right marketplaces, you're buying at the right prices, so on and so forth.
While you're getting ready to do this, what sort of tools can you use to learn a little bit more? I mean, you mentioned, you know, buying in the right marketplace, knowing mm-hmm. yourself, figuring out, you know, whether or not the cash flow is going to make sense for you. So what are some of the tools out there that you can use to kind of figure this out?
One free tool that we use, which is a pretty awesome site, it's called bestplaces.net. That gives us a snapshot of the local marketplace and in the metropolitan statistical area. We can see, you know, median home prices. We can see unemployment rate. We can see school ratings. We can see housing prices, both on a sale side and also on a rental side, what the average 1, 2, 3 bedroom apartments renting for. Same thing with the single family homes. We can see median household incomes. And so we can see all those demographics that we can at least do a back of the napkin. It allows us to do a very quick back of the napkin approach to a marketplace. In fact, before we jumped on this call, Miranda, we had an opportunity that was just brought to us up in Michigan, Northern Peninsula of Michigan, smaller market, which we're okay with small markets, but I knew nothing about this market. So literally within 10 minutes, I got on bestplaces.net and I got comfortable. And then I also went to the economic development site for that particular city to find out what businesses were there, what industries were prominent, and just to get a feel for how pro-business they were. You know, I want to know that businesses are moving in, not moving out. And I want to know if there's a diverse nature of employment opportunities there, not just like a one horse town or one manufacturing plant that employs 70% of the people. So in a very quick snapshot, those are the two main resources that we use to determine whether or not a market is going to be worthy or not.
Okay. And so what if you're somebody who's kind of looking, they want to do some cash flow investing and make the most of it, but maybe they're not into real estate. So we're going to push you a little bit out of your comfort zone a bit, but what if they're not really into real estate and they're looking for something else that might provide them opportunities for some cash flow investing? Do you have any ideas there?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it really depends on what your personal strengths are, right? I mean, there's lots of different businesses. I mean, we just talk about physical businesses, right? I mean, we don't have to talk about anything in the real estate realm, but I mean, a physical business. So I think really you have to play as an individual, you have to determine what your strengths are and what your interest levels are. But I mean, we can run the gamut, Miranda, on other cash flow vehicles that are out there. I mean, I don't know if you have any in mind that you'd like to chat about. I'd be more than happy to give you my opinion on any particular ones if you're thinking, but
yeah, no, I mean... Well, no, I mean, I'm just thinking in terms of, you know, some people like to buy businesses or invest in businesses. And there are other people who really like the idea of, I know it's kind of related to the stock market and everything, but they like dividend investing and then growing their dividend portfolio to get to the point where now they're just, you know, they've got some passive income from dividends, you know, and there's REITs that kind of combine, you know, real estate investment trusts that kind of combine real estate with dividend investing. There are a lot of interesting cash flow opportunities out there because, you know, I am not somebody who relishes the idea of being a landlord.
Okay. I see where you're going with it now. I just, fair enough. That's a great point that you make. In fact, I don't like being a landlord either. So we'll get that clear. But I'll tell you that there's other opportunities. You'd mentioned REITs. There's also private placement opportunities out there for being a limited partner or a passive investor in real estate investments or, you know, note investments or other types of business investments. So there's ways to be passive and still be an equity player in a deal, you know, have an equitable ownership and actually be a partner, though, actually be able to share in the distributions and share in the back end profits when that property or business should sell. So, I mean, there's other ways to be a passive investor. In fact, I would tell you that I've got a lot of very close friends. It's somewhat real estate related, but they enjoy the lending side of the business. They'd rather not be even involved in the real estate side and actually owning the actual physical real estate itself. They would prefer to be on the lending side. And so whether they act as a hard money lender or a bridge lender, they act as the bank and they enjoy that side of it. They don't want the physical real estate. They want to be the money guy. And for them, that works. And it gives them reoccurring income on a regular basis and it fits their needs quite nicely. So again, I just think it really comes down to what floats your boat? You know, what do you have the biggest interest in learning? Whether you have the skill set today, but what do you have a passion for? You know, I mean, there's so many different ways to make money and become a cash flow investor. But what is that for you? What do you have an interest in? And whatever that might be, dive into it. You know, educate yourself, go read books, meet other experts in that field, you know, take them to lunch, pick their brain and go for it.
When we're talking about things like real estate, or if we're going to do hard money lending, you need some capital for that. So what happens? We have some listeners here that they haven't built up that capital yet. They don't have the capital. So do you have any ideas for people who maybe don't have a lot of capital, but they want to get started and they want to start learning about cash flow investing and they want to get in there and get going and start building that portfolio? What can they do?
Yeah, I will tell you that that's not necessarily true that you need a lot of your own capital. I mean, having your own capital can mean a lot of different things. I mean, you don't need a lot of liquidity to be a lender. I mean, you know, so a lot of people have money in their IRA accounts. Your IRA, if you have a self-directed IRA, can act as a real estate lender. I mean, you can act as a bank to, if you know a local real estate investor that wants to buy a home and flip it, you could make a short-term loan to them out of your IRA. So your IRA could actually be the hard money lender. You could use arbitrage and literally go borrow. If you know you could borrow money, maybe it's a home equity line against your house at $50,000. I'm not suggesting you do this. I'm just giving ideas for those that might not have a lot of liquidity in their bank account, but you could borrow money at 4 or 5% and loan it out at 8% and take the spread in the middle. So there's many different ways to very creatively get into the lending side of the business, even if you don't have liquidity yourself. So I wouldn't want people to think that, wow, I have no money to my name whatsoever, at least as far as money in my checking account or my savings account that I can access immediately. I can't be a lender. I need to go make money somewhere else first. So there are definitely creative ways for you to get involved in that space without having a lot of liquidity.
Yeah. And I think one of the interesting things now too is there are a lot of real estate investment crowdfunding sites now where you can go and for $5,000 or $10,000, you can buy in a little bit. We had mentioned real estate investing trusts a little bit earlier. It's possible to do some fractional investing with those. So you're not going to see like a huge amount of money from that, but you know, it's not as scary as using your IRA to lend money to other people.
Yeah. Again, I think it really comes down to even if you're investing in one of those crowdfunding sites, they allow, it's a beautiful thing. Like the changes that have occurred over the last couple of years in the security side of the business, you know, allowing crowdfunding sites to be available for smaller non-accredited investors to get involved, you know, proportionally speaking, small amounts, but in bigger deals, like partaking in bigger, and for the most part, a lot of them institutional grade deals where 10 years ago, that never would have been the case. Like the guy with $10,000, he wouldn't have been able to get involved in an institutional grade deal. I mean, that was really set aside for the high net worth individuals, the wealthy individuals of the world. And so that's a beautiful thing. But with that being said, it's still, you know, your responsibility as an investor. investor, even if it's only going to be your 10 grand, I mean, that could mean all the money in the world to you. You still need to actually do your due diligence. You need to fully understand the business and the investment, you know, the piece of real estate that you're putting your fractional investment into. You need to understand what it is and know the risk associated with it. And kind of the same thing with being a lender out of your self-directed IRA, right? I would never suggest that someone just go, you know, hand money off to the real estate investor in town that says he needs it for a flip without knowing anything about being a private lender or the legalities that go along with it or the risk associated with it. So again, education, I think, is the key. Whatever it is you have an interest in, just make sure that you fully educate yourself. Again, tons of books. The beautiful thing about, you know, education nowadays, we got podcasts, Miranda, like your podcast, and I host the podcast. There's so much free content out there that wasn't around 10 years ago. And then you got Amazon.com. You can go in there and probably type in become a hard money lender, and you'll probably find 300 books on the topic. So lots of different resources out there to get the education that you need.
Yeah, and that's a really good point that it doesn't matter what you're investing in or how you're trying to do it. It goes back to that old thing that Warren Buffett used to say is invest what you know, invest in what you know, yeah. and to pay attention and to really do your due diligence. So thank you so much for coming on today. Could you go ahead and let our listeners know where you mentioned your podcast, let them know what your podcast is and where they can find you online?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have two podcasts, two weekly podcasts. One is called Real Estate Investing for Cashflow, and that one focuses on commercial real estate investing. And I have another one that is called the Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast. And as I mentioned, that's what our focus niche is. And that podcast, that's all we talk about is mobile home park investing. So if you don't have an interest in mobile home parks, probably not a good fit for you, but it's a great show. We've been doing both podcasts for quite some time. And the best way to reach me would just be go to my main website, which is kevinbupp.com. Last name is spelled B. You and then two P's like Paul. So kevinbupp.com, and you can contact me through there. And if there's anything I can help your listeners out with, please just have them reach out to me.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And we'll go ahead and move into the panel portion of our show as soon as we have yet another word from our sponsors.
Thanks a ton, Miranda. Well, hey guys, before we get to the second half of today's show, if you've ever wondered if there were a way to capitalize on all of that online chatter you see of the millions of investors on social media, well, your wait's over because the Buzz Index uses the same artificial intelligence techniques used by some of the world's most sophisticated hedge funds, and now you can make their edge your edge. The Buzz Index is licensed to an exchange-traded fund. It trades under ticker symbol BUZ and provides investors with a portfolio of securities which show the highest degree a positive investor sentiment online. There's no surveys, no guessing. Here's what they do. First, the Buzz targets the most mentioned large cap U.S. stocks across the social media landscape. And the more active the conversation, the greater the reliability of the Buzz. Each of the most mentioned stocks is given an insight score based on Buzz's proprietary analytics. And the 75 stocks that have the most bullish score, those get included in the index each month. Their goal is to capture the latest big data-driven insights, and then the 75 companies each month positions the Buzz to create the highest return potential. Invest in the wisdom of the crowd. Head to moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ for more information about the Buzz Index. That's moneytreepodcast.com/BUZZ. Quick disclaimer, I use the Buzz Index in my portfolio. It doesn't make it right for you, but just got to let you know that. And I also got to let you know that Miranda is all about life insurance today. Tell me about it.
Life insurance is one of those things that everybody should have to help protect their family in the case of your untimely passing.
Isn't it always untimely?
It is always untimely. That is true. But it is an important part of your financial planning. And Health IQ is one of the first life insurance companies that will give you a discount for living a healthy lifestyle. Health IQ saves their customers up to 33% on their life insurance because they are living healthy lifestyles. In fact, 70% of their exclusive rate clients get approved at the top rate class. And Health IQ is the fastest growing life insurance company with over $5 billion in coverage. So it's got a really great track record already, even though it's pretty low. And one of the great things about Health IQ is they reduce your chance of being penalized for adverse family health history if you are living otherwise healthy. And you also get great perks like if you have a plant-based diet, if you have a low carb diet. It also looks at working with carriers to ensure that strength trainers have a BMI buffer to account for their muscles. So it's this really targeted look at life insurance. If you want to see if you qualify, head on over to healthiq.com/moneytree to get your free online quote to see if you qualify for these rates. Again, that's healthiq.com/moneytree. See if you qualify for up to 33% off on your life insurance. And now we'll go into the panel portion of our discussion. We listened to Kevin Bupp's interview here, and it was really pretty interesting to talk about the idea of investing for cash flow, because a lot of us think about investing for long-term wealth building. And when you see that, we think about in terms of like building your retirement nest egg, trying to get your money built up over time. But Kevin talks about investing for cash flow. So what is the difference between investing for cash flow and investing for long-term wealth building? And where does that fit into your own investment philosophy? And let's go ahead and start with you, Linda.
In my experience and in my portfolio, I'm investing more for long-term wealth building. And the idea of cash flow to me comes into play more in retirement when you're wanting to access cash and have some sort of income stream. So that is my plan, and that's my strategy, is just to keep investing for the long term. But that's also because I have the majority of my investments in stock investments. When you're talking about real estate, you have that cash flow element, and that's an important part of determining your return in real estate. So I could understand what Kevin was saying and agree that that's something that, you know, helps you continue to get a great return on real estate. And it's just something to take into consideration that you're going to have cash flow, even if you're not saving for a later time to have cash flow in retirement. It's going to be happening all along the way when you're investing in real estate.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense when you're looking at different types of investments. What about you, Doug? Where do you stand? I mean, do you have some cash flow generating investments, or do you stick mostly to wealth building?
You know, as we're using these terms, I'm thinking that there are so many different terms that people throw around. And the fact is that they all kind of mean the same thing at the end of the day, I think. If, let's say, we're not talking about Linda's model of retiring and then just looking for a monthly check from your portfolio, which I would definitely call cash flow. But I usually talk to people about total return investing. If it turns out that investing in real estate or REITs or stocks or bonds or something else is a good idea for you based on your tolerance for risk, and it's going to generate some sort of income stream that you're not going to spend today. So let's talk about most of the listeners to the show who probably aren't retired. These are people who are going to take that income they get from their portfolio, hopefully, and just reinvest it. So if you're looking at how much money you can eventually have, does it really matter whether it's from cash flow that you reinvest, or does it matter if you get it from stocks that you buy that go up in value? Of course, you could make the argument that there are different tax considerations in each of these models, which is true. But I get nervous when people talk about, well, you've got to own an investment that generates cash because that's the way to build wealth. I think there are a lot of different wealth building models, and this is a great one. And I often look for investments that pay dividends, and I'll compare one against another based on its dividend yield. But that's just part of the big picture.
Can I just jump in and say, I totally agree with Doug. And I just wanted to add that, you know, it was interesting when I first started learning about investing, we were taught kind of this difference between investing for long-term growth and investing for cash flow. And the idea was that maybe younger or smaller companies would tend to reinvest their capital because they wanted to grow their company faster. And then the companies that paid out dividends were more mature companies that didn't have to worry about that reinvestment, but that could actually pay out cash to their shareholders. So in a stock situation, it's different than real estate. And I just remember, you know, years ago, that was sort of the distinction, was a more mature company is going to be paying out more of the dividends and cash flow and things like that. And so it was a definite divide between the growth and the cash flow. I think in real estate, though, it's different. But I agree with what Doug said.
Yeah, well, and I think, though, too, when we're talking about this, as far as for individuals goes, I think another thing to think about is, you know, I think Kevin's talking more about generating income that you can use today, right? So his idea of cash flow investing is all about generating income he can use today and kind of moving into that sort of almost passive income situation, right? Rather than trying to build it up and live off of it later in retirement, he's talking about building up a way to invest in a way that you receive your returns today so that you can live off of them today. So, I mean, what do you think, Joe? I mean, what are your kind of investing style and your investing goals when it comes to cash flow or building wealth?
Well, I think I don't like to get attached to this is my favorite type of investment. For me, a return is a return is a return, right? If I make money through cash flow versus through a capital gain, it's a return and I'm very happy with that return. So I don't like getting attached to that. What I always do is start with the end in mind, which is how long of a time frame do I have until I need the money? And then I backtrack from there. So if I need the money right now, certainly I'm going to turn on the cash flow machine, right? To see if I can live off that. But if not, if I don't need the cash right now, I think getting the cash in my pocket, if I don't need it today, is a waste. And I might be creating some tax issues that I don't have if I put it in a more tax advantageous way of investing. So my philosophy is all based on the time frame. If it's right now, then let's turn on the cash flow bucket. If it's not right now, then I have to ask myself, why am I getting cash today that I don't need today? If it's something that's paying a lot of cash that I can reinvest inside a tax shelter, fantastic. But otherwise, I'm just beginning with the end of mine.
And don't forget, by the way, a lot of people make the mistake that they go, oh, look, I'm making money. And then they take it out and they spend it. And based on what Joe is saying, that is the biggest mistake you can make. If the way you're going to try and build wealth today happens to be you're going to get an investment that pays some current income, make sure you take that income and throw it back in the investment. Otherwise, you're never going to grow the portfolio.
Right. And once again, I think it depends on your goals too. I mean, if your goal is to use the money to spend for your life, then I guess it doesn't matter if you spend the money, if that's what you're hoping to use it for, if you're trying to fund your lifestyle with it.
Well, clearly then, Miranda, that's the best way to invest, right? I mean, the best way to invest then is to maximize cash flow if I need it for today. I often have to think too, because we see, you know, we probably have a lot of people in the FIRE movement that listen to our show, the Financial Independence Retire Early movement. If I'm in my 30s and I'm investing in everything to get the cash flow, realize there's this little thing called inflation. And in a lot of the FIRE blogs, inflation kind of isn't something that I think a lot of people don't take seriously enough. Like if I make enough money from my job now to build a portfolio where I can spend it all today by maximizing cash flow, realize that 15 years from now, bread's going to cost double what it costs today. And if I don't have something to counteract that, I'm buying half the bread, you know, 15 years from now that I'm buying today.
You're such a downer. So
no,
we also have a different situation with real estate in that you're going to have make improvements at some point in the future. You're going to have to put on a new roof. You're going to have to make improvements. If it's commercial real estate, you're going to have to do some upgrades. There's significant investment that's going to come in at some point in the future. So if people are just focused on spending that cash flow and think they can spend everything that comes in, I think that can be a mistake as well. You need to set aside some money for future improvements and realize that there are going to be, you know, remodeling and other things that you're going to do to try to increase your rents over time.
Well, how do you feel about using the increase in rent as a hedge against inflation? Doesn't that help you out? So the amount you're actually going to get every month as a landlord is going to be commensurate, presumably, with the increase in inflation. That solves Joe's bread problem.
We got to solve the bread problem. That's job one.
Hey, so let's not solve all the problems right now. Let's go ahead and move on here. We only have such a limited podcast time here. Right. Kevin did talk briefly about using leverage to make the most of his investing because he uses it to buy property. You know, I've heard a lot of people, in fact, a lot of younger people talking about during the latest Bitcoin craze, taking their student loan money and using it to buy into Bitcoin. So that's an extreme example. And I'm not going to ask you about, you know, Bitcoin, but I will ask, you know, it makes sense when you're thinking about buying property and using leverage to buy property as an investment, whether it's a rental property or something like that. That tends to make sense. Do you think it makes sense to use leverage when you're investing for cash flow that doesn't have to do with real estate? So does it make sense to maybe borrow to buy into like a dividend stock, like buy a large amount of dividend stock that's supposed to then create some income for you, or a large amount of money to maybe buy interest in a business that would create returns for you? Do you think that using leverage makes sense in those situations? And we'll go ahead and start with you, Joe.
You know, leverage to me is gambling, and there's nothing wrong with gambling as long as you understand what the risk is. My problem with leverage is there are many people that use leverage in their investing philosophy that have no idea what they're getting into. We saw, a recent example in January, right? Lots of media reports talking about tons of people taking cash advances on their credit cards, taking out mortgages and home equity loans to invest money in Bitcoin. And, you know, not to get too Dr. Philly, but how's that working out for you now, right? Since January, we've seen a huge drop off there in people that use leverage. It was very painful. I think, though, if you know what the risk is and you have a strategy that encompasses what'll happen if your leverage goes the wrong way, I think leverage is a fine way to make more. Clearly, you can make money faster using somebody else's money than you can using just your own. But realize that there's an Achilles heel to everything.
Yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense. You do have to be really careful, and I like that. I was just in Las Vegas a couple of days ago, and you know, my son was like, "Hey, are you going to play any slots or play any games? Maybe it'll help you win a little money and everything." And I was just like, "Well, when you do this, it's got to be entertainment. It's got to be stuff you're willing to lose. And right now, I'm not really feeling it." But what about you, Doug? How do you feel about using leverage as a way to invest?
Yeah, you know, I want to sort of dig into this point because one of the things that Kevin said was he referred to cash on cash return and threw a really high number. And I think the important thing is to realize that let's first just define what this means. Cash on cash is a calculation that people a lot of times do in real estate where they'll calculate the amount of cash flow that they get, meaning how much rent they're getting from whatever it is they own, divided by the amount of invested equity, how much money is in the deal. And it's not necessarily taking into account, or it's, let's say like this, it's deceptive to a lot of people because you're using leverage, you're borrowing money. I'm not in any way suggesting that Kevin was trying to deceive us. I'm just pointing out that if you don't understand that there are a lot of different ratios that real estate investors look at, then you may believe, oh, I can make 16% on this. And you know, why would I put money in the bank at 4% when I could own it, or 2%, whatever, when I could own a house, a real property, and make 16%? And that's not really what he said. You're not making 16%. You're using this specific ratio, cash on cash. And one of the things that a lot of people find very difficult when they talk about real estate with someone who's a real pro like Kevin is there are a lot of different things you have to know about it. And he kept stressing how important it was you get education before you do anything like this. This is his full-time job. You know, this is what he does. This is not a simple thing like, oh, you know, let me watch some late night infomercial and I've got $150,000 in my IRA. Why don't I use that to buy a property and I'll make cash on cash returns of 16%? It's nothing like that. And I think that he was excited about what he was doing and it could excite a lot of people, but you've really got to learn this stuff because leverage, you know, goes both ways. It's not, you know, as Joe said, it's a great way to make a lot of money, to use someone else's money, but it's also a great way to get crushed.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I really like that you and Kevin both are stressing. You really have to know what you're doing before you can get all crazy up in this. You really do have to know. So what about you, Linda? Have you ever used leverage to get ahead with investing, or do you prefer to kind of just stick with what you already have?
Well, I've used leverage in real estate investing, and I think it is appropriate there, and it does definitely enhance your return. I think leverage with stock investing has to be used very, very carefully. And most of the professionals that are hedge fund managers use quite a bit of leverage, which is, you know, which adds to the risk as well. I think for the average investor, that's not something that you want to get involved with because it's just, it is a two-edged sword and a double-edged sword. And if you have the markets go against you, it can be devastating. And the margin calls, et cetera, that can happen can wipe out, you know, a total profit that somebody had. And it's concerning right now because the studies are showing that margin balances are very, very high. So a lot of people are using leverage with their stock investments. So I hope that they are, you know, doing that very carefully and selectively and are not getting over leveraged because that can end up being, you know, turn into some sort of a downward spiral when the position has to be sold out automatically to cover the margin calls. And so that is not something that we want to see or have any of our investors have happened to them.
And that's a point that can't be stated strongly enough, Linda, I think, because when I see leverage go bad, leverage goes great until it doesn't go great. And when it doesn't go, when it goes bad in a hurry. And it ends up making, it starts off as a small problem sometimes, but this, that snowball really picks up steam really, really quickly. And it goes bad fast.
One thing I was going to point out, you know, I mean, we talk about a lot of the time, and what I say a lot is leverage may magnify your gains, but it also magnifies your losses. So you have to watch out for that. But yeah, what were you going to say, Doug?
Touching on what Linda was mentioning before, that that she feels that leverage on real estate is more reasonable than margin or leverage on stock investing. But before we go that far, people have to realize that the 2008 crash was due in large part to a lot of over leverage on real estate. And people once again got so excited, you know, they were literally buying houses with zero money down. What does that mean? That means that you're borrowing all this money. And the moment things go bad, it follows the Joe Saul-Sehy model of, boy, does it go bad really fast. And, you know, look how many millions of people lost their homes because they were over leveraged. So anywhere where you are borrowing money and things don't go your way, if you're not prepared to handle that kind of volatility, just don't do it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I think that makes a lot of sense. So finally, Kevin talks about focus and, you know, being focused on how you invest and having that kind of focus. Are you all focused on how you invest? And we'll go ahead and start with Doug this time. How do you focus and what is your mode of focus when you're investing?
I'm sorry, focus? What are we? Yeah, no, I'm just kidding. I am a big fan of focusing on what you know and not focusing on what you don't know. And I think that a lot of people, they get very, you know, very moved by listening to a podcast or by reading something. Oh, that's a good idea. I'll try some of that. I get this in my day job, you know, as a financial advisor. I sit in Israel. And so people here often have other distractions, like they have currency issues. And they say, oh, you know, but I live in Israel and I have, you know, so therefore we buy things in shekels, but my money is invested in American stocks and bonds. And maybe I should start trading currencies. And then they get excited about that. And I tell people, listen, focus on the things that are important for who you are and what you know. And like Kevin said, you know, if his thing is trailer parks, great. But if that's not your thing, if you don't have the time and energy to focus on something and something new, just don't go there. Just do what you're good at. And I think that all of us, you know, in the years that the Money Tree podcast has been going, you know, we all have certain areas that we really focus on. I talk to people about using money managers and buying bonds. And, you know, we talk a lot about ETFs. And I think that each of us really has demonstrated that we do have interests that we focus on. And my guess is that people who are more experienced investors tend to be more focused.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. So what about you, Linda? How do you feel about focus and investing, and how do you practice that in your own efforts?
Well, I think there's a fine balance between focusing, but also having diversification and being in the right asset allocation models, having the right asset classes and the mix of large, mid-cap, small cap, international, et cetera, I think is really important to a portfolio. So I like diversification. And then if I want to pepper that with some individual equities, I might do that with some technology stocks or things that I'm comfortable with and use myself. And that might be a little bit of the more focused part, but I want to make sure that I'm also broadly diversified. So I do both.
Okay. So what about you, Joe? How are you employing focus in your own efforts?
Yeah, for the most part, I'll say what Linda said. I think there's two things. People want two different things. People listening to this are going, well, I heard diversification is fantastic. You should stay diversified. Diversification doesn't make you wealthy. Diversification helps you hold on to your money. What makes you more wealthy is focus. So on one end, if you get really myopic about your investment strategy and just hammer one thing, the standard deviation goes up. You can make a ton of money, but you can also lose a lot of money. As you diversify more, you find that you hang on to money. So I think that if you focus on one thing only, the risk gets pretty big, and you have to start looking at what we call the risk. Guys, what's it called? The risk
reward ratio.
The risk thing.
Risk reward ratio, the risk meter, the risco, the
risk. Risco kid.
Oh, yes, the risk premium.
The risk premium. That's what I'm thinking of. You have to look at the risk premium. So I'm taking all this risk by focusing on one thing. Is it really paying me, you know, exponentially larger returns because I'm focusing on that thing? I think that's how, Miranda, you know, if you're focusing on the right thing or not.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And part of that does, you know, include your risk profile and everything else. And of course, we all know that I like to focus on, you know, the index investing and you know, and I've dipped my toe a little bit in some, you know, dividend investing and a few other things. But really, in general, I mean, part of my idea of focus as well is to say, okay, going back to what Joe says about looking at the end and keeping the end in mind, you know, a lot of my focus and my discipline comes from saying, okay, what do I want my money to accomplish? And what do I need to make that happen? And just kind of trying to stay focused on that and not change up my investment plan every time. I mean, it was tempting, right? A little while ago with the whole Bitcoin situation, it was tempting to get in there and be all crazy, but I'm glad I didn't ultimately. In the end, I said, well, is this really going to help me, you know, reach my long-term goals? Does it really fit with my strategy, or is it just some wild hair? And I think part of keeping that focus and keeping that discipline is remembering that you do want to keep that end in mind and figure out how to move forward that way. So I think that brings us here to the end of our time. So let's go ahead and talk about what we are up to in our world. We'll go ahead and start with you, Joe. What is happening over at Stacking Benjamins?
Well, this last month was Women's History Month. And so we have a fantastic historian on, Woody Holton, who wrote the book Abigail Adams. And I never knew what a investing badass Abigail Adams was. And we talked to Woody all about Abigail Adams and how she made lots of money back during the time of the Revolution.
That is awesome. Now I want to go check that out. What about you, Doug? What's happening over on your end?
Well, actually, I am nearing the end of a new book, which I didn't think I was going to write yet another book, but I was really interested in the topic of dealing with inheritances when you live outside the United States. Specifically, I found that a lot of the people I talk to here in Jerusalem are people who are getting an inheritance from a parent or grandparent in America, and there are all sorts of ins and outs in doing that. So I've written a bunch of articles about it, and then finally I just said, okay, I'm gonna sit down and write a book on it. And I'm just mentioning that to people, so they should sign up at my corporate website at profile-financial.com for the newsletter, and I'll be announcing the book hopefully pretty soon.
So Linda, what about what's happening over at Be Wealthy and Smart?
Okay. At Be Wealthy and Smart, I recently was coming back from LAX to Palm Springs and had a 2.5-hour ride with a driver. And he was a young person wanting to get started and be smart with money. So I kind of recounted my conversation with him and gave 8 money tips for beginners and people that are just starting out. So check it out at Be Wealthy and Smart. How about you, Miranda? What's going on with you?
I recently recorded an interview about investing and money for a Women Investing Summit. And if you run over to Planting Money Seeds, you can check out how to watch that investing summit for free. So head on over to plantingmoneyseeds.com and get the information about how to participate in this investing summit for women and learn a little bit more about investing. With that in mind, remember to head on over to moneytreepodcast.com for more information for all of our archives and for some resources that can help you get started with investing. Remember to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, on Stitcher. We're on all the devices. You can have us delivered to you every single week, and you can learn whatever you want to learn about investing from some of us that aren't professionals. That's great. Anyway, make sure you subscribe. And remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.